Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Grohman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. This is Elaine Grohman. And as you know, this is called Going Beyond Medicine. And today I have a very interesting guy that I'm so grateful to be able to talk to today. His name is Jeff Adams. And Jeff is the founder, and I guess you'd call him the CEO, of the Artesian Farms, which is an amazing project that he started to help to bring food to metropolitan Detroit, but in Detroit proper. So we're going to talk about the things that he's doing, how he's helping the community in which his business is settled, and what he's doing to help to bring good, healthy food to this community. So welcome to the show, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Elaine. I appreciate you having me today.
Well, tell us about how did you come up with the idea of Artesian Farms, and what was the impetus of the desire to do this? First of all, let's give a little history, if you would, please.
Okay, sure. My wife and I lived in the suburbs of Detroit up until 2003, and after a call to go on a mission trip to Brazil to work with kids who live on the street, we felt really compelled to do something locally. And so we ended up moving from the suburbs to one of the neighborhoods of Detroit called Brightmoor, and which is a very under-resourced community in the west side of Detroit. And we worked with a nonprofit there. My wife started a Christian elementary school, K-5. And I was going to keep my job being in the technology world for about 28 years or so. But after being bought out by another company, I was severed from that. So I got into the nonprofit world as well. And so we moved down to Brightmoor, living here, and working to mentor teens, and my wife worked with young kids. And what we decided, when we look around in Detroit, there's a really a large movement for urban farming, urban agriculture, whatever you want to name it. But people are really growing food to become self-sustainable. And so I really started looking at this to see how you can make this a business where we employ people. And in Michigan, if you're going to be in the agriculture business, which Michigan has a large agriculture industry, it's principally in berries and apples and other fruits and then some other vegetables, but it's really a seasonal type thing. And what I want to do is find a way to be able to provide year-round employment for young people that I've worked with in the neighborhood to provide them year-round employment. So I started looking at the food system and saw that there's many, many steps to get from the farm to your plate. Each step along the way adds cost and creates waste. And so the farmer gets the least amount of money. The traditional farmer gets about 16 cents on every dollar spent on the food. So I figured if we can collapse the supply chain, we can get more money to the farm, we can reduce waste, and we can provide a better quality product and more flavorful and more nutritious. But we had to figure out a way to do it year-round. And so I started researching different growing methods and landed on this controlled agriculture project called vertical hydroponic farming. And so that's kind of how we got started. Really, it was more of we set it up as a social enterprise, and the social part of this being employing people from our neighborhood. Secondly, taking a blighted building and bring it back to life and bring it in an economic center, which we bought a building that had been occupied since 1998.
Wow.
And then the other side of it is from the environmental side. And we use a lot less water. We have no water output that goes into the tributaries and rivers and the Lake Erie, whatever, creates algae blooms and things like that. All of our water is treated by the Detroit Water System. So that's kind of what we did. And so we got started on Earth Day in 2015 and have grown steadily since that time.
That is just amazing, Jeff. Can you tell us a little bit more, for those who are not familiar with the term vertical hydroponics, what does that actually mean?
Well, what it is, it grows basically in water. The vegetables we grow are just a variety of lettuce, kale, and basil. And it grows in water, and it uses a medium called rockwool to support the plant. But there's plants that float on, floats that are floating in 4 by 8 with trays, we're about 4 inches deep. And then vertical, we have these trays that are stacked vertically anywhere from about 16 feet to 24 feet high. And each level has, you can grow somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 to 250 plants per level.
Wow. So now how, so there, as I'm looking on your website, which is a great website, it's artisanfarms.com, A-R-T-E-S-I-A-N farms.com, or is it artesian? Am I mispronouncing? Did I just mispronounce?
It's artesian.
Artesian. Okay. Well. I'm sorry about that. Artesianfarms.com. And it's really interesting because it looks so commercial, so industrial. And that's what's brilliant about the fact that, you know, you're using space so efficiently. And that's the challenge that so many farmers have that are using the land is you're just on the horizon. You're just on the flat level. Here you're able to literally stack it because you're in a space that is limited, right?
Yeah. And so, that's a very, very good point. An acre of land in traditional farming is about 45,000 square feet. Because of the way we grow and stack the product and then the frequency of harvesting, in less than 1,500 square feet, we have the equivalent of over an acre of property of a traditional farm.
Wow.
So it's a very, very efficient, high yielding, and very, very flavorful.
And so, as you said, you're right now you're growing greens, so kale, basil, and what was the third? Lettuce?
It's a lettuce mix. We call it Motown mix.
Okay.
And there's a variety of lettuce in the mix.
And obviously, they look like they're beautiful in terms of the size. And is there any advantage or disadvantage to using grow lights rather than the natural sunlight in terms of the vitamins and things that are inherently in the plant?
Well, the grow lights are set to use only the spectrum that the plants basically use.
Mm.
The natural sunlight provides a full spectrum of light. The plants only really need a very narrow spectrum of light. So the light kind of hones in on exactly what the plants need. Now, the grow lights, certainly consume energy,
right,
more so than what a traditional farm would because they're using natural sunlight. You have some of the carbon footprint associated with that. But the lights we use are very efficient. We start off using one type of light and we switch to a second type of light that is actually about 50% more cost effective than the other lights. And so we can, do more with less. So
that's really awesome. So, and then, but because of the fact that you have a controlled environment, Jeff, is it that you're having less problems with any insect infestation or anything that might be a natural predator to the plant?
We do encounter problems with predators. The two predators that we kind of encounter on occasion are aphids and thrips.
Right.
And they're little microscopic bugs, and we don't use pesticides to combat them. We kind of do a preventative type work where we use air curtains and things of that nature as we come in to the farm. One in fact we get an infestation of them, we use natural bug predators that go after them, and they're ladybugs, and there's another bug called pirate bugs, which is not their official name, but they devour those aphids and thrips. And so we order couple thousand at a time and just deploy them, and they take care of the problem.
And they take care of the problem, right? So it's a happy ecosystem, right?
Exactly.
So again, my guest is Jeff Adams. And Jeff, do you call yourself the CEO or the president, just so I'm giving you the right title?
I just really consider myself the farmer.
Okay, awesome.
We've got a great investment team that's behind us. So there's a lot of people involved with managing the process. I just consider myself the farmer.
That's awesome. So you're located, if I'm not mistaken, kind of near between Southfield Freeway and are you south of Schoolcraft?
We're south of Schoolcraft and west of the Southfield Freeway.
Okay.
We're in an industrial complex there that was built, back in the mid 20th century. That was basically they were building Massey Ferguson tractors in the facility here.
Oh wow. Well, and just so for people, because this people can listen to this all over the world, Jeff. And I think what's so important is that you honed in on a particular area in Detroit that was that had really had a very, you know, in many people's minds, a negative reputation of being maybe a dangerous place or not, you know, the safest place to go. And it's so great that you went into that neighborhood to help the people that are born there or living there for whatever reason. You know, they need that. They need to be out of a food desert and create this beautiful thing that you're doing with the farm and helping them to be able to sustain their own life. How were people in that area? How were they when you first started this project? Were they a little bit hesitant about bringing this industry in, or were you getting the community support? How were you dealing with that environment?
The community is very supportive. You know, we've been living in the neighborhood since 2003, so I had built quite a infrastructure of contacts. You know, within the community, I was former president of the Brightmore Alliance, which is a neighborhood organization. So, you know, I had a lot of great contacts throughout the neighborhood and throughout the city. And so when we started looking at this and doing this, I was talking to a lot of them, and everybody was really, really enthusiastic about it because of the opportunity it could present to young people 18 to 30 for a job opportunity to make a pretty good living for their family.
That's wonderful. And Jeff, your decision was to employ people in that community first and foremost?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we wanted to employ people from the community. And the reason for that is in Detroit, it has a very poor mass transit system.
Yes.
And so for people to get to work, and most people don't have, I won't say most, but a number of people in Brightmore don't have vehicles. So they have to rely on mass transportation to get there. And so it's very difficult for them to get there on time, which is, you know, kind of a prerequisite to keeping your job.
Exactly.
And so by starting in the neighborhood, the folks that work here, they can arrive on time. If they can't, they can either contact one of the other employees or they can contact me, and we'll get them to make sure we get them here as close to on time as possible.
Wow.
And being a, you know, understanding the hurdles that these young people have to go through, we are a little bit lenient on some of our policies just because we want to support them, knowing that they have challenges in their life, that they want to overcome, and this is their first step to overcoming is with this job and with this income.
That's fantastic. And again, my guest is Jeff Adams, and he is the farmer who started the Artesian Farms, I love your byline, grown in Detroit for goodness sake. That's so beautiful. And, you know, there's so many things that people forget about or maybe don't even know about when they start working with food, when they start working with those substances that sustain their own life. Isn't it interesting how people say, oh my gosh, you know, life is already providing us life. And when you interact with that, you begin to start taking better care of yourself. Would you agree?
I agree. And, you know, I think, you know, when the people that work here, you know, now they have access to, you know, locally grown produce year round, they can taste the flavors is better. It's more nutritious because of the micronutrients we have in the process. And you know, they're harvesting it so they can see the actual impact of where it comes from, and it becomes, you know, more real to them that it's not just coming from somewhere, you know, somewhere far off. So,
yeah,
a lot of people that come in and visit, we have a lot of, you know, different young, you know, groups that come in like Cub Scouts, things of that nature. And some of them try, you know, kale or lettuce for the first time, and they all of a sudden realize that maybe they like it.
Yeah, it's because, you know, I think so many people that are accustomed to having, you know, if they live in an area that's called a food desert where they don't have really good quality food in their vicinity, or they don't maybe have the access to fresh vegetables and fresh fruits, this is such an education about what does food do for you? What does it do for you to help you to be able to think clearly and to be able to be balanced in keeping yourself healthy, which then helps you to make better choices in your life?
Yeah,
that's really great. So how are you bringing then the attention, and how are you getting these products? Because obviously you're growing a heck of a lot of produce. How are you getting this out into the market, and how are people learning about what you're doing?
Well, there's a couple things we do. Our primary focus is to sell to retail grocers. And because we grow large volumes of a very narrow product mix, it really fits into a grocer's process. There's other farms here in the neighborhood that are seasonal farms that have a very wide range of product that deal more with the culinary world and the food service world, where, you know, chefs want certain things, you know, certain ways and things of that nature. We elected to go into the grocers, and we have right now about 25 or 26 grocers that stores that carry our product. We have another six that will be joining us shortly after the first of the year. So we market through, you know, through those organizations. And we, some of them we deliver direct to, others we use a wholesaler intermediary to do the delivery.
So
and
I
then we also provide, you know, food, you know, through a local food pantry that's just down the street from us that serves a congregate meal every night of the week. And we provide, you know, lettuce and kale to them. And
wow, that's fantastic. How are you finding that? You're growing by leaps and bounds, literally growing by leaps and bounds. And how are you working like round the clock? How many days a week do you have employees working there?
I work virtually 7 days a week.
I would imagine.
Yeah, my employees work Monday through Friday, and then sometimes I ask them to come in on Saturdays for special stuff. But and so, you know, we have this very systematic process. So we have certain days where we harvest, you know, lettuce. We have certain days where we harvest kale, and there are certain days we harvest basil. And sometimes the overlap, like today, we'll do basil and lettuce and preparing for, you know, for tomorrow's deliveries. And so, you know, we have, you know, two people that are out harvesting. We have two people that are in our packaging room that are packaging. And then they put it into the cooler, and tomorrow we'll deliver it, or later Saturday we'll deliver it to the retailers.
You know, this is such a fantastic concept, Jeff, because, as you know, there's so many people that I know that are gardeners, number one, but there's a number of people that I know that are herbalists and use plants medicinally. And, you know, have you ever thought about, you know, looking with to people that are using, let's say, herbs? What comes to mind from what you're growing is basil, which has antimicrobial and antiviral and antibacterial properties that most people don't even realize, that, you know, that if you can extract the essential oil from these things,
oil,
that
yeah,
they can be used in medicinal ways to prevent problems. There's so much more than just making a salad out of the food that you're doing, that you're growing.
Sure. Yeah, that's really one of the four, you know, forward thinking things that are going on right now in the industry across the country and across the world, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lot of organizations are seeing how they can do this and do this vertical growing or controlled agriculture to provide the year-round process or the products to be able to make their oils and things of that nature and be able to get it locally, because, you know, so much of the product, when they buy the volume, they're buying it from around the world. And by the time it gets there, maybe it's lost some of its value, some of its nutritional value and medicinal value. So there's a big movement, you know, around the world to look at, you know, controlled agriculture for the medicinal side of it. So
yeah, it just...
I have personally not thought about it. I mean, you know, thinking about it, but it's something that certainly could be on the horizon.
Yeah, I'd love to put you in contact with a couple of people that are herbalists that would use this medicinally. You know, and, mm-hmm, and ways that you can kind of have ancillary things coming away from this because you're using the same product, which is
right.
so great. Tell me, Jeff, how are you seeing, you know, literally from your bird's eye view of knowing individuals, how it's literally changing people's lives to give them the opportunity, as you had mentioned, to have that autonomy of being able to get to work, being able to provide for their families, and just changing their own view of themselves? How are you seeing this changing people's lives?
That's a good question. It's kind of a slow process, but for the most part, the five employees or four full-time employees and one part-time employee, this is really their first full-time real job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen that, you know, we work with them on some just basic job skills, you know, being on time, you know, the way you act, you know, those types of things. As I've seen a real movement in their presence and how they present themselves and things like that, all of them have picked up on the processes that we need to have to do, you know, to grow, to harvest, to package. They all understand that, and they pick it up very well. And so you know, I feel confident that, you know, when I'm not here at the farm or doing something else, they can run the farm, you know, by themselves. So that's a big learning experience. One of the young ladies has been with us now for about over 2 years, and another guy's been with us a little under 2 years, and then a couple guys have been with us about a year. So they've got some pretty good experience. And so this is building, you know, their job resume so that in the event they want to go on to some other, you know, occupation or some other job, this is the ground, you know, a cornerstone for them to move on to something bigger and better if they decide not to stay here.
Yeah, and what's so great about, you know, what the work you're doing, Jeff, and I personally want to thank you, and I had the pleasure of meeting you a couple months ago at an event that we'll talk about a little bit, how you get your funding and how you get the people to know about what you're doing and then to support what you're doing locally. If we'll talk about that in the second half hour. But what is so great is that you're giving people the opportunity to learn life skills by someone who actually cares about them, not just somebody who's in the HR department somewhere, you know, and yep. Really showing them how do you manage your time? How do you manage your, you know, finances or whatever it is, so that they begin to understand that they can have control of their lives and not just be victims to circumstances in their lives.
I think the biggest hurdle that I've seen, and we continue to work on it, is the whole concept of planning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't had to plan a lot in their life, and so everything's kind of been reactionary. So, you know, instead of knowing that, okay, you got to take my child to the doctor today, I need to tell me, Jeff, that I'm going to be gone, you know, 2 days from now. Okay, so all of a sudden I get a text message at 6 o'clock in the morning, hey, I'm not going to be there today, I got to go to the doctor, you know. Those kind of things are, you know, are things that they're really, really trying to work on with them, so that, you know, we can plan better for how we operate the farm and how they can better plan for their own personal, you know, household. And that's, you know, that's something that I think has been very difficult for them.
Well, it's a beautiful thing, because in the natural world, just by watching the growing process, people can learn the concept of planning, because obviously you have to plan every step of what you're doing in this agricultural venture, because you can't plant a little sprout and expect the next day it's going to be harvested. You have to plan the general time frame and then what to do. So nature itself is quite a library of understanding of how we have the past, how we've already harvested things and it's benefited our body, how we're in the present moment and what we're doing, and how we can relate to the future by having this personal experience of watching something grow. You have a whole experience right there that nature is the teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's really important to begin to bring those concepts into their world, because nature's already showing us, like right now, as the leaves are falling while the earth is preparing for rest, and then we're giving nutrients back to the soil so in the springtime it can grow again. Really interesting.
That's so
that,
true. Yeah.
It's really
so
interesting that you're doing that. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And the thing about, you know, with our farm, it is very systematic, very, you know, planned out. You know, we know that it takes, you know, we plant a seed today, and in 12 days we move it into the farm, and then 21 days after that we harvest it, in the case of lettuce. So it's very process oriented. So it's all planned out. We know exactly when it's going to be harvested and approximately how much it's going to be harvested, you know, every single day.
Hmm. Have you ever thought of having an area of what happens? Maybe you just have a very small group of plants. You say, watch what happens if we don't do this, you know, so that they can understand. So
no,
people can understand, I mean, if you don't plan, it will fail.
Well, that happens, and we don't have to set aside something that just happens naturally.
Yes, of course.
You know, some things just, you know, go wrong. Okay?
Yeah.
And so you just, you know, try to, you know, eliminate as many of those possibilities as you can. One thing should happen, sometimes pumps fail, we don't catch it, and some of the products, you know, we lose some of the product, you know,
right.
Those kind of things. So it happens just kind of on a regular basis. We just try to minimize it. So.
Right. As life happens, as they say. So,
yep.
Jeff, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you? And we're going to take a break in just a minute or so. But when we come back, I'd like to talk about how you were able to get the funding for all of this and how that's growing from here. But how might people reach out to you right now if they want to Do you offer tours? Can people come and take a look at what you're doing, and so that maybe it can expand?
Yeah, so we do provide tours, and it's not a long drawn out tour. It takes about maybe 15, 20 minutes, depending on how many questions the people ask. And so we come in, we show the farm, we explain the process and things of that nature. They're welcome to come in anytime. I mean, basically, I shouldn't say anytime, but it's basically Thursday afternoons, Friday afternoons, Saturday mornings for the best time.
Great.
But they can reach me at Jeff, J-E-F-F, at Artesian, A-R-T-E-S-I-A-N, farms, that's plural, .com. Or they can call my cell phone at 248-318-0544.
Great, great. Well, we're going to take a real quick break here, Jeff, and we'll be back to continue talking about how did you work with people in the community to help to bring this to fruition? We'll be right back. This is Elaine Grohman. My guest today is a gentleman, Jeff Adams, from Artesian Farms in Detroit, who's working to bring good, healthy nutrition to those in the community. We'll be right back.
The Empower Meditation Channel. Nonstop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption-free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul. Calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
Did you know that 7 in 10 girls believe they are not good enough or don't measure up in some way? I'm Amy Poehler. You may know me from film and television, but I'm also involved off-screen, encouraging young girls to be proud of who they are. Body image breakdowns and the pressure to be perfect often causes a girl's self-esteem to plummet. But by being positive role models, we can change that. The number one wish among girls is for their parents to communicate better with them, including more frequent and more open conversations. So get involved and start talking. Begin a conversation with a girl in your life about the importance of self-esteem. Tell her why she is beautiful and set an example by avoiding negative self-talk. You can make a difference in the lives of girls, and that is no laughing matter.
This message was brought to you by American Women in Radio and Television and was made possible through the generous support of the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to raise self-esteem in girls everywhere. To learn more, go to campaignforrealbeauty.com. Thank you for making a difference.
Okay, gang, so chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So who's going to do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
It's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just going to keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Elaine Grohman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to the show. This is Elaine Grohman, and my guest today is Jeff Adams of Artesian Farms. He is the chief farmer, and their byline is "Grown in Detroit for goodness sake." Welcome back to the show, Jeff.
Thank you.
Jeff, can you, as we were in this little break, Nate, my producer, was asking me some really great questions about, you know, can people just, if you have an excess of produce, do you take that to, like, say, food pantries or things like that where people can buy your food at a reduced price? Or what kind of relationship do you have with food pantries? I know you had mentioned that in the first half hour.
Yeah, what I do is there's one food pantry that's here in the neighborhood. that, like I said, has a congregate meal. And so every night of the week. And so we provide, you know, whatever excess we have free of charge to them.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And then they also have another program where they work with Forgotten Harvest, where I believe it's on Wednesdays, there's product that comes in for the congregate meal. Then on Friday, they have a community gathering where people can come and get, you know, products from Forgotten Harvest for free.
Mm. Now, are you having, thank you for doing that, because that's such an important thing, because with the food waste that happens, which is just atrocious. It's so wonderful that you're not allowing that to happen so that people are getting this. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The statistics show that about 40% of the food that's produced at the farm goes to waste.
Oh, gosh.
And most of that waste is actually on the consumer's plate, but they don't eat, they put in the trash. But each step along the way creates waste, and that goes into the landfill, which is billions of pounds, creates a gas that's more potent than carbon dioxide, and that's methane.
So
anything you keep out of the landfill from that perspective is helpful.
Absolutely. And if they could just create composting bins, then it wouldn't be in a trash heap, but it would actually be replenishing the earth. So how are you having, I would imagine, since you have been obviously successful and you're able to bring your good, beautiful produce out into the community, are you able to mentor other companies that want to do what you're doing?
I do a little bit of that, more exploratory, you know, asking questions and things of that nature, how to get into it, you know, what kind of, you know, business model is there, things of that nature. As it actually gets into when they start to grow and build out, I haven't really been involved with too much of that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, none of that, actually, but mostly just from people that are inquisitive about it, that are considering getting into it. And we sit and we'll talk with them for a couple hours.
So obviously an adventure of this magnitude is not inexpensive by any nature. So how, may I ask, how you were able to get the funding? Because I know that you worked with impact investors and people that, you know, really want to use their the gifts of, you know, good fortune that they've had from their hard work to really help other people, not just to make a profit, but to make a meaningful profit.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it is an expensive proposition, and what's really been helpful is, when I moved into the neighborhood, you know, it created quite a social network of people, both locally in the community as well as those outside the community that supported the nonprofit that we worked with. Many of those were, you know, from the church we attended here in the Detroit area, Kensington Church, and many of them were, you know, business people. A lot of time, and also, you know, being a part of the community and organization here that was supported by a couple foundations, I was able to develop a relationship with the Skillman Foundation and the Max and Marjorie Fisher Foundation, who have both made pretty significant investments in the Brightmoor community. And through that, you know, process, I've been able to develop relationships with the leadership of both of those organizations. And so when we started looking for funding, you know, we first started putting business plans in place when you're going to banks and talking to bankers, and then without much success. And then one of the people in that I knew, Jeff Petherick, who's an investment banker here in the Detroit area, I sat down and chatted with him and told him what we've been doing. And he kind of chuckled and said, you know, banks talk about being supportive of small business, but not startup small businesses.
Mm.
So,
and you,
so anyway,
you have to start somewhere, right?
Exactly. So anyway, but Jeff and Don Lee has had this concept of creating a social impact fund. And
yes,
they started this program called Impact T3, which you were at one of the events here a month or so ago.
Yes.
And so they went out and had, you know, maybe a dozen or two investors that invested a certain amount of money. And through Impact T3 and program-related investments from the Max Marjorie Fisher Foundation, the Skillman Foundation, we were able to get the funding to start and build the concept. And so that got us off the ground. It got us, we purchased the building, we did the renovation to it, we got everything started. And then once we proved the concept and got, you know, some consumer or customer buy-in from the retailers, then we decided to scale. And so through Impact T3 and the network there and others in our network, we were able to go out and raise additional capital to build out the balance of the farm.
Mm. You know, isn't that just so heartwarming when you see people that are not just, you know, the banks, worrying about their bottom line. But people that are doing impact investing, who see the vision of individuals like yourself that are saying, okay, it's not just about the bottom line. It's about how, what is the future for human beings?
Yeah. You've particularly seen the impact investing really starting to get traction here, certainly in the Michigan area.
Yes.
In Detroit with the foundations. The Max and Margaret Fisher Foundation, Philip Fisher has been very instrumental in really pushing the impact investing for the foundations. And many of the bigger foundations have also come on board with that. And they're doing a lot of different impact investing around the city of Detroit and around, all over Michigan.
Mm. So are you thinking about expanding your enterprise in terms of being in other locations in areas like Brightmoor that have maybe been food starved, and not only food starved, but economically challenged? Are you thinking about, or has anyone approached you, about doing it elsewhere in the city?
Well, the investment team that we have is certainly interested in another location here in the Detroit area. And once we get this one, totally built out and make it, very, very sustainable, then we'll launch into another business or another location. There is interest to go to other cities and working through organizations that support, under-resourced neighborhoods in other parts of the country, and seeing if we can't create partnerships in those locations.
That is fantastic. So are you thinking also expanding the produce line that you're currently growing, like tomatoes? I know that tomatoes are often farmed hydroponically. Are there other things that do or don't work in that kind of growing environment?
Well, tomatoes and cucumbers and peppers don't really work well in this environment.
Oh.
They work great in greenhouses and things of that nature, because you can have pollinators, bees and things of that nature that pollinate the flowering produce, those that I mentioned. So they don't work well indoors, and so we probably won't go into those. There's other products that we can do that we've tested. You do spinach, you can do chard, your rainbow chard, regular chard. We've tested a variety of beets that actually grows kind of interesting, and also radishes that grow kind of interesting. You think they grow under the ground, but these actually grow above the ground, so it's kind of interesting.
Wow.
But it's one thing to be able to grow it, it's another thing to grow it and make money at it. So that's the key is, can you do that and make money on the product?
Right, because ultimately you're supporting families. And yet to be able to make that profit, and money is not a dirty word. It's something that we need to have in order to sustain our lives, but it can be used respectfully and all of that. So that's really fantastic. So how are you finding that this has changed you? How has this changed your outlook? How has this changed your perceptions? This big enterprise.
That's a hard question.
Well, that's my job to ask hard questions.
I would say conceptualizing and launching is the easy part to get this thing going. The harder part is actually making it sustainable and doing it every single day. And a lot of things that you don't necessarily plan for in the business planning process all of a sudden come to light. And so then you start adapting to what reality is. And so that's been a kind of an eye-opening experience.
I would imagine it, having gone into a building that had not been occupied for some time, that you have just the infrastructure problems of heating a big space in the wintertime in particular, and making sure that you keep a constant in terms of temperature, et cetera.
So, the building was in pretty good shape when we bought it. We had to put in some of the mechanical stuff, heat, air conditioning, things like that. But that's certainly part of it. And the environment is, once you get it controlled, is pretty easy to control. But you have different things that happen. You have electrical failures. And all of a sudden your lights are out and your pumps don't work and things of that nature. And you got to be able to respond to that quickly. So you just got to be real nimble and be able to work each day, have a plan, but be able to adapt that plan, as things happen. And
Well, that's, of course, with any business, you have to be able to do that. And that's wise, because you're teaching people also, as you had mentioned earlier about planning, you have to plan for the inevitable. You're going to have to plan for pipes that, you know, leak or different things like that, so that you can be more mindful of how in other areas of your life, you just try to keep things in best working order so that you're not crushed when there's a problem, right? So yeah, you're teaching a heck of a lot more than just farming.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing you're teaching me is, you know, when things happen, I mean, you can worry about it, and I have. You're worried about a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. and a lot of stuff plays in my mind. But that worry kind of paralyzes you.
Right.
And you can't think too far beyond where you are.
Right.
And worry about tomorrow or next week, because if you do that, you lose track of what's going on today. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a whole raft of health issues that can come along with, you know, pressure and, you know, worry and stress and things
of
that
course.
Nature. So that's you know, one of the things that I think I found, you know, over time, the last couple of years, to really try to find a balance in that so that I don't get all stressed out about things. And of course, my wife's been helpful and keep me on that path.
But, yeah. Well, I'm sure you do that for one another.
Yeah.
So again, my guest is Jeff Adams, and he is the chief farmer at the Artesian Farms, which is in Detroit in an area called Brightmoor. And what he's doing is bringing food and opportunity and employment and mental, emotional, and physical well-being to people by giving them jobs and teaching them about, literally, whether you know it or not, you're teaching them about the living world. And so, how are you finding, Jeff, and thank you for what you do, and how are you finding that people are coming to you maybe that have wanted to do something to help the community in some way, maybe not necessarily doing, you know, vertical farming, but other ways that they maybe are inspired by what you're doing? Have you had people come to you and just say, how'd you get over the hurdle of self-doubt? How did you get over whatever is our self-imposed limitations so that we can actually start doing things for one another?
One of the things that has happened here in the last, say a year or so, is the neighborhood organization, Brightmoor Alliance, who our executive director, Larry Simmons, has been very passionate about building a community of prosperity. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways he has done that was certainly talking about education and youth and things of that nature in the schools. Another way is through, you know, homegrown businesses that, you know, maybe, you know, somebody working out of a home or things like that, that can make an income that supports their family. So what he's asked me to do is kind of act as a mentor for those folks that are interested in starting something. Could be on a small scale, could be on a scale of what we do that I'm doing, but to really kind of act as a mentor for those people in the Brightmoor area. To see, kind of help them scope out, is it really practical to do what they're asking to do and things of that nature? And then if it is, how do you go about having it? How do you go about business planning and things of that nature? So there's been a couple situations where I've worked with people on that regard.
That is really great, because you're already doing what so many people wanted to do but not known how to do.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that people don't realize is that you need a network, a social network, to really support you in what you're doing. And if you don't have that social network, it's very difficult to become successful. Mm-hmm. And that's what I keep telling people here in the neighborhood that talk to me about this. I said, what's your social network? Who are your contacts that can support you emotionally, financially, things of that nature, so that you can get off the ground? Because if you don't have that, the likelihood of success is pretty slim.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we forget, is that there's the not just the financial part, but there's the emotional roller coaster that you're in, as you just had mentioned, and then you by association are dealing with the emotional roller coasters of the individuals whose lives you're trying to help and whose lives you care about. And that's what so many challenges have occurred when businesses neglect that. And it is so much a part of our quote unquote human resource. Human resource is not just what's the benefit you're going to get, in terms of a piece of paper. What is the benefit we're going to get for humanity? much more important.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's so great. So tell us about tell us a little bit about the work that your wife is doing too. You said something about that you two work as, do you work together with the work that you're doing in her nonprofit?
Well, what we did when we moved down here, when we came back from our trip to Brazil, we knew where we wanted to plug into the neighborhood or where we wanted to plug in Detroit, because our team had gone down here for kind of training and development, team skills, and we'd gone to a nonprofit called City Mission here in the Baltimore area. So when we came back from Brazil, we knew where we wanted to connect into. And my wife's an educator, and so they asked her to come down and develop curriculum to do their tutoring program. One thing led to another, and they offered her a position, and so she was commuting from Rochester to Brightmoor, which is about 25 miles, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we just finally figured if we're going to, we're very active in the Christian Community Development Association, which really believes strongly in relocating to the community where you support. And so we moved to the Brightmoor area in 2003. And in 2004, she decided to start a Christian elementary school there at City Mission. And so it was K through five, and then about 50 kids in the school. And then after I left my position, after 28 years, I was helping raise funds to support the mission, the same mission and the school. And that went really well until the market crashed in 2008, 2009. And it became very difficult to raise the necessary funds to keep that open and have 50 kids come to school for free. And so they ended up closing the school. And in that whole process, that's why I became interested in this. So we both are very much into working in the neighborhood, working with kids. And when the City Mission Academy closed, she went to work for another Christian school here called Cornerstone, which had been in operation for about 25 years. And she was a first grade teacher there. And she just retired after this school year. So.
Well, good. So does she work with you at Artesian Farms?
She does. She's kind of an unpaid delivery person. So she comes in on Wednesday, Thursdays, or Fridays and does deliveries for us. So that gives me another probably 12 to 14 hours a week in the farm working with the people here. And so she's been very gracious to do that. She kids me all the time that she wants to get a salary, but I told her sometime soon.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know what? One step at a time, right?
Exactly.
So, in that opportunity to help other people, foster their ideas, what do you think is the biggest challenge for somebody when they're trying to do something like this to really help others in humanity to make something that's sustainable? What do you think is the biggest challenge that you encountered? Was it the financing? Was it, just having the stamina to be able to talk to so many different people and say, help believe in this idea? What was the biggest barrier that you felt that you overcame?
Well, I think the first part of it was certainly to get the financing to kind of test it and then expand it. That was a challenge, especially the first part. Once I got that done and we proved it out, and then the investors in that round of funding were very helpful and went out and getting other investors from their networks to invest in it. So that became, less of a challenge. The thing right now is the challenge is just making sure we can, continue to move ahead and get to where we're at, we're making money in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, kind of a daily challenge. And like every small business, every entrepreneur kind of goes through that. You got to get growth spurts where you have to add cost before you have revenue and that whole thing. So that gets a little bit stressful.
Yeah.
And so it's just trying to manage the day-to-day operations.
You said, the thing that's really important to have is a community of people around you that are believing in what you're doing and that you can talk openly to about your worries and your concerns. And maybe because you're dealing with things you've never been a farmer before, perhaps, and you don't know exactly what, you might be encountering. And isn't it all about what the relationships that we have with one another that are not adversarial, but are more moving in the right direction together?
Right. Yep.
So again, my guest is Jeff Adams of Artesian Farms. And the Byline Grown in Detroit, for goodness sake, which is located in Brightmoor, which is a community in the, did you say is it southwest or is it northwest? It's southwest Detroit.
Northwest Detroit.
So it kind of is bordered by, is it Telegraph? Telegraph
and Southfield Freeway, and then I-96 and 6 Mile or 5 Mile.
Okay. So just people that are not used to, you know, if they're not familiar with Michigan, and it's kind of in the southeast part of Michigan in the metropolitan Detroit area. And the website is Artesian, Artesian Farms, which is plural.com. And really, if you take a look at what they're doing, what Jeff is doing, what he's helped to do with community and to help to bring people, help people literally grow their own lives in a way that they never have had the opportunity before. And with someone who has a kind and open heart, who's teaching them literally how to plan, how to think, how to recognize their own capabilities, is something we all need mentors, don't we, Jeff?
Exactly. Yeah.
And as you said, your church community was very impactful in helping you to decide to do this too, right?
Yeah, so, exactly. And, you know, the investment guys, the guys and ladies that invest in the farm, you know, I can pick up and call any of them, and they, for advice. And like, we have a standing conference call on Monday afternoons that we kind of talk about what's going on at the farm, and they make suggestions and things of that nature. So it's very helpful.
That's great. So again, tell us, for those who maybe you're just catching the tail end of this, and by the way, anyone who misses the show after it airs, which is on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock, so it airs on November 7th at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Anytime after that show, it is available to listen free of charge through empowerradio.com. Just go down to the website, look under shows, go to Going Beyond Medicine, and you can listen to this broadcast anytime as a podcast, which is great. And certainly, Jeff will be able to, if he chooses to have it as a link onto his website, so that people can listen not only to the conversation, but hear the man behind the voice, which I think is really important. So as you're doing all of this, Jeff, it must be very gratifying to you to see, having been in industry, as you said, for 25 years plus, that you're seeing that there's all different kinds of ways to use your time to benefit others. And thank you for doing that. I want to thank you for doing that.
Well, you're welcome. It's one of the things that why I moved here is to work with young people to help them see the opportunities they have before them and how they can plan to get there.
Mm-hmm. And just by that, you must be showing people in your family, certainly younger people in your family, how do you work as a community, not just to be seen as a leader, but maybe a mentor in the community, an elder in the community, that looks beyond the challenges and looks at the heart of the people that live there, because everyone needs the same things. We need love. We need friendship. We need shelter. We need good food. We need to be cared for. We need to have healthy relationships. And you're growing a lot more than just food.
Exactly. That's what our hope is. That's what we plan to do, or what we're doing.
So again, Jeff, could you please, what is the best way for people to reach you personally if they have any questions? Could you please give your contact information again?
Sure. There's two ways to contact me. One, through my email. It's jeff@artesian, A-R-T-E-S-I-A-N, farms, F-A-R-M-S, .com. Or they can reach my cell phone at 248-318-0544.
Okay, great. So we have just 2 minutes left. So, Jeff, where do you want to go for the remainder of your life with what you're doing?
Well, I see right now probably being here in the farm doing this in Brightmoor for another probably 5 years. And mm-hmm. at that point, we'll figure out how we're going to exit the business. Hopefully, we can do it where some of our employees could have an opportunity to own part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife and I will retire to Lexington, Kentucky.
Lexington, Kentucky. Oh, great. Do you have family down there, or just a place you love?
Yeah, my youngest daughter lives there with her three children.
Great.
My wife, she retired so she can spend more time down there. She's down there right now.
Oh, great.
So that's our plan. And then,
And what a wonderful grandpa you are that you're teaching your grandchildren how to be a part of a community and how to really give back. Because as I said, you know, we need our aunties and our uncles and our grandparents, whether they're blood relatives or not, to be people that we can rely on, that are safe people, that are willing to help us in whatever it is that we're doing in our lives. That's what we need to rebuild in our communities. And you're doing that. And I thank you for you doing that and for having the vision. Again, my guest has been Jeff Adams from Artesian Farms, the byline grown in Detroit, for goodness sake, in Brightmoor. There's so many opportunities for people to learn that there are things that they can do, that there's challenges and opportunities and relationships that grow right along with the food that you're growing and that we all need. So thank you so much, Jeff, for what you do. I appreciate you. And I hope to see this. I want to come down and look at the farm. Is that okay?
That's fine with me. Come on down.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jeff.
I appreciate us being a guest today, too.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. So thank you so much. And this is Elaine Grohman on Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Please know that you, too, can make a difference. You see a problem? Ask, what can I do? What can I dream into being so that other people, all people, have what it is that they need so that they can enjoy this experience called life? Thanks so much, and talk to you next week.